Thursday, July 8th, was a crescendo of work and organizing and family telephoning. Early in the morning, Mr. Clabe Carter came to walk around the yard with me and Pat and decide where to put a lovely 4-foot-high magnolia that had come to me from George Washington's home, Mount Vernon. How I cherish it, through the charming generousness of the head man I'd met while doing the ABC show. We'll leave it in the pot until November, then plant it in the old Sam Johnson house, was the decision. And then about 10 came Roy White, loaded with plans and problems. Where to place the trailer that will arrive this afternoon. Took phone calls to get its dimension and heights, a picture, so we'd know where the front door was. Eventually the decision was made to put it between the Dale Meeks trailer and the Davis's house, lying east to west, so that the best windows, the living room, the front door, all face toward the river, and have the shade of one of the glorious live oaks. And then, how to lay out the sidewalk at the birthplace house. A nice curve, parking problem there for future use. Whether or not a curb, I very much want some sort of graveled surface, even if it is hard, rather than the ball newness of concrete. Then the need for an extension or apron here at the front gate, the south gate, to avoid that muddy entrance. And the same at the west gate. There we run into the problem of my beloved Bristadale Ripple Limestone that used to lie at the bottom of an inland sea close to the shoreline and is now cracking rather badly. Perhaps it will have to be replaced. The same thing laid on a permanent cement foundation. I'm discovering more and more this house, this place, is built for many people and many years. We'll have to stand up to them. Must keep the parking on the west side. Maybe we discuss the problem, reach the possible decision of an extension of the triple limestone, about a 4 feet sidewalk parallel to the fence so that cars might drive up to it facing inward and retain parking for about 5 or 6 cars on that west side. Then the Johnson City trees. Mr. Carter had said this morning he was quite capable of locating good 15-foot live oaks and getting them planted at the proper time in November. I think I'll try to get A.W. to create some small body called perhaps Johnson City Improvement Association, which ought to be able to get tax-exempt letter thing from the Internal Revenue Service. Then Linda Bird can give her donation to it. And so can I, and perhaps others. This will begin street trees and maybe a future park. By that time, I was getting a little haggard with problems. We took a mug of beer and went up to the porch on the second floor. Such a wonderful view of the river and never used and terribly dirty. Spread out the number one problem on the table between us. We talked about enlarging our 2 bedrooms on the east side. Interrupted by lunch for Roy and the kinfolks, who had returned from a wonderful 2 or 3 hour trip to Johnson City. Brennan's boyhood home with Jesse Hunter, the bank, every little thing there is to see there, and Pat. And then after lunch, back upstairs for real work on the addition. This I look upon as my retreat for my old age, my place away from the world. I told Roy what I wanted in my room, bookshelves, a fireplace out of door, and a view. A view's a darn hard thing to come by, even in this lovely country, with the carport on one side and the parking area storage bins on the other. But Roy works with such loving care for us, and there will be a wonderful view from Lyndon's room. We'll share the best walk-in closet anybody could hope for. The point is, it must not be a crash program. I must work toward something I'll be satisfied with and love for the rest of my life. This is it. Roy is one of the great pluses in my life. In fact, there's so many people that I have worked with that I feel close to. Suddenly, I felt just too exhausted to drive into Johnson City with him and look at the second floor of the bank, as Lyndon had asked me to. So instead, I just look at the plans, which I found actually rather good. Said, that's great with me. Bid him goodbye and lay down for a little rest, which didn't turn out to be a rest at all. But Project Family, Project Calming the Waters after Lucy's being baptized into the Catholic Church. First, I talked to Lyndon. He did sound lonesome. He said he was coming this weekend, that I could proceed to set up the meeting for Winston and Cameron and Mr. Hackney, Don Thomas, John Ben for Saturday night. P. Peter Hurd for work on the portrait if he could come. History is my preoccupation. Our niche in it, for the next year or so. And a portrait counts, and a library counts. And then, of course, Lyndon's day-to-day achievements and burdens, and the way he carries them, count most of all. Those I cannot control, I can only help on. He said George Reedy was leaving quite soon to go to Mayo's for the operation on his feet, and Bill Moyers was taking over. He talked mostly about Lucy. The occasion to preach a sermon. I don't know the exact content. The gist was that she'd done wrong. I hear that a good many sermons have been preached on the subject. Thank God, to my knowledge, Bishop Hines, Bill Baxter, and Reverend Sumners have not opened their mouths. Anybody that hurts his little girl wounds Lyndon deeply, and he feels that she is high-strung, upset, in an almost frightening condition. He'd made her stay with him as many hours as he could when he was off of work. And so I called Lucy, and I found from her standpoint that she had been consoling him. She said, but you know, that bad man didn't come home until 12 o'clock for dinner last night, but I was the best daughter I could be, and I tried to help him. I could hear through the brittle veneer, cheer and lightness in her voice, that she was a damaged little girl. She actually feels that she may have had an adverse effect on the ecumenical movement. She said, Mother, I thought I was supposed to be baptized. I want to do everything. I want to go all the way. And I thought that was what I was supposed to do. She had with her at that very moment Bishop Hannon, and she asked me to talk to him. She had been, I think, very much reassured by talking with him. I gathered he'd been there with her several hours and had sort of taken charge of the situation. I talked to Bishop Hannon and found him a very considerate, capable-sounding man who inspires trust, even on the telephone. He had talked to Lyndon, too. The gist of it was the apostolic delegate was willing to issue a statement which would attempt to take Lucy out of the picture, but that had been decided, and I think that Jack Valenti had a hand in this, that it would be the wiser thing for Bishop Hannon to issue the statement, general gist of which was that it had been the decision of Father James Montgomery, after due and earnest consideration, to baptize Lucy, using the word conditional baptism, that the church did accept as valid baptism by any other church according to Christian principles, and that their action indicated no reflection on her previous baptism by the Episcopal Church. I asked to add the phrase, of which Miss Lucy Johnson had been a good and faithful member since early childhood. And so the statement will be made, and I hope this will be the last statement, and that the matter can rest in peace. I told him I wanted her conversion to be a bridge and not a barrier. And I think the ecumenical movement is one of the big things of this century, one of the great human pluses. I believe our mistake was in following exactly the advice of Father Montgomery alone, without seeking the counsel of some perhaps wiser individual higher in the hierarchy of the church, and perhaps more knowledgeable about public relations aspect, and perhaps also someone in the Episcopal Church. Well, one can only go forward and not back. So I tried to console and love. I wish I could have been of more use to Lyndon. He said, things are not going well here. Appointments are not. It's hard to get really good men. Vietnam is getting worse day by day. I have the choice to go in with great casualty lists or to get out with great disgrace. It's like being in an airplane and I have to choose between crashing the plane or jumping out. I do not have a parachute. There have been some bad columns. When he is pierced, I bleed. It's a bad time all around. But maybe he'll have 2 good days at home. And so, at 4 o'clock, I went into Agnes's beauty parlor for a swift hairdo. My liking of small-town life rises. I wonder how it would survive really living here. Then, almost 6:30, we helicoptered over to the Haywood for something I had wanted most of all to do, having Walter and Marjorie to dinner. And they brought 3 of their children, John and Joe and little Lyndon. I told them to bring everybody they wanted, and Jesse Kellum, and all my Alabama kinfolks who'd met Walter and talked of Catawba County property and Uncle Claude's inheritance and all those things through the years. We boated slowly down the lake. Edwina and I sat on the top deck with pillows behind us and drinks in hand, looking at the cliffs and the pink and blue sky. And she talked about penology. I got Liz to listen because I knew she would be interested. She has between 300 and 400 women in her prison, death sentences ranging from 1 year to life, most common crimes being shoplifting and forgery, and a heavy sprinkling of crimes of violence, cutting up or killing some woman over jealousy, or their husband or boyfriend because of ill treatment or jealousy. The system in Alabama, the prison system, is not actually supported by the state, except about 20%. The other 80% they have to make through work, on a prison farm, in a textile mill where they make denim and cotton crash goods. They also teach them a great variety of business courses, typing, shorthand, bookkeeping, this at night after they have worked all day. These success stories are not many, because if they get back and go right back to the same environment, they fall back into the same old rut. If they're able to get out and get a good job, if their intelligence and ambition is sufficient to enable them to take the training offered, then when they get out, it's a different story, a job and a new start. And we had a delightful time talking with Walter and Marjorie about their home. Marjorie loves it. It's the best home they've ever had. Walter has 3 employees in his office. I've been told by Abe that he has some 6 good clients, better off financially than he's ever been. He takes fairly frequent trips to New York, Washington, Mexico City. They have a boat. He said they run the tail off it. Marjorie had water skied for 2 hours that day. She goes to coffees and teas. I understand their acceptance in Austin has been mostly good. Some holdbacks, some little slurs, loving efforts by loving friends. We talked about my tenant problems, possible life estate for Charlie Cutler, what we could do about the old folks that were just living their lives out there, producing nothing in rent, but lots in ugly stories in the newspaper. And then back on the patio for a good barbecue dinner. An early trip home. I'm getting frantic for sleep. I shamelessly take a sleeping pill each night. But for several weeks now, I wake and awake and awake. Sleep scantily. Not that deep, refreshing sleep. Only a few times do I. But tonight, I had the best night's sleep I've had in a long time, despite waking up at 2 o'clock with a fluttery, pounding, nervous feeling and reading an Agatha Christie mystery for a couple of hours. However, I went back to sleep. It was great relaxation until about 8:30.